On your schedule, there's showing two different presentations. What I'll in fact do is do both of the first presentations that I'm doing together, and then we'll have some time for a few questions before Glenn elaborates on some of the things that I'm going to mention in this first introductory presentation. But the first thing I'm going to do this morning is to talk a bit about what is the social economy. One of the reasons is because prior to 5 years ago, I really had no idea what the social economy was. A researcher spends most of the time researching in the North, and prior to about 5 years ago, the term social economy, the term social economy was used, but in a slightly different context from what we know of it today. But over the last 5 years, we've learned quite a bit about what is the social economy, and in particular, the importance of the social economy in the North. What the social economy is, we've always known is important in northern communities. We called it different things. We use different terms, community economic development, and a whole range of different terms. But now we are trying to use more this notion of social economy, which is perhaps a more holistic term, a better term to describe what we're trying to do with the organizations that we now call social economy organizations. So if we can have the first screen. So one of the first things when you're talking about social economy organizations is that there's kind of a biased view of what is economic development. When people think of economic development, they often think of economic development as coming from either profit-oriented organizations or from the state. Those are the only two organizations that can produce economic development. You either develop something to make money or you develop something to get elected. In reality, though, we see that a lot of the development that goes on in communities, which you have to call economic development, is done for different reasons. It's done in the interest of the communities. And you can't say that people do these things to make money. You can't say that people do these things to get elected. They do it because the community needs to do it. And they do it because they like becoming involved in things that go on in their particular community. And they do it because they like the idea of making their community a better place to live in. And so that's one of the crucial ideas behind the notion of the social economy. And if you look at all of the activity, which you have to call economic activity, anything that involves the economic development, anything that involves money, that involves salaries, that involves a whole range of economic issues, you have to call them forms of economic development. So when you look at that, you see that, especially in the North, a large, if not the largest sector of the community economies are these social economy organizations. And you have to understand that that's the case, especially in the North. And what we found is that a lot of the times, and most of the time, the work of these groups are ignored. That people try to use this traditional economic models when they talk about economic development. Traditional economic models is that you either develop by trying to develop profit-oriented organizations or through some state-sponsored organizations. And in doing so, you leave out the potential of a whole range of activities that can come through social economy organizations. So it's these groups that we're talking about that we're studying when we look at the social economy. So the social economy for us is a basic, a very simplistic definition. It's economic activity that's neither primarily profit-oriented or directly provided by governments. I should add that we're part of a national group of researchers looking at the social economy in Canada, and each region has slightly different definitions of the social economy. But ours is a very general one. Ours, we try to include a lot of the more northern characteristics, such as the traditional economies of northern communities. And these are things that we're talking about. We'll elaborate more of this as the day goes on today. So if I can get the next slide. So elaborating on what is the social economy, are all those organizations that separate from private and government and functions as an economic organization that's based on the values of service to the community to meet social needs rather than generate profits. One's a basic idea. It includes a whole range of activities, charities, foundations, nonprofit groups, volunteer organizations, and cooperatives. The other aspect, of course, is that unlike other forms of economic development, it's quite democratic. It involves virtually all social economy organizations involve some sort of democratic process in decision making. So that's something that's good for communities. And they value people and their contributions in their activities. They're also, and this is especially important for the North, given the colonial heritage in the North, it's based on the principles of participation and empowerment. Is that social economy organizations are those types of organizations, if you compare a whole range of organizations, those are the organizations that concentrate on using and increasing participation of individuals and empowering those individuals. The other aspect is that they operate in virtually every sector of the economy, especially in the North. They operate from housing, in areas from housing, communications, and a whole range of activities. And I'll elaborate a bit more on that when we get into a discussion of our actual research that we've been doing. So the social economy organizations are organizations that concentrate on the interests of the community first. They're crucial for economic development in communities. They are ignored, and they have the potential to perhaps solve a lot of the economic and social issues that many communities are now facing. And we believe, as researchers, Cernica, speaking for Cernica, that's especially the case in the North. What I want to do now, if Clint, if you can go to the next, is talk a bit about why should we care about the social economy? Why are we looking at the social economy? As I said before, one of the reasons why we as researchers have decided to become involved in this issue is that it's simply to give some sort of light to this issue, to bring it out in more into a public's attention that these social economy groups are important to the economic and social development of communities, and these activities are ignored often. They provide services that are essential to communities is another aspect. They provide services to the community in a way that involves people and gives more control to communities. And the other aspect, and I'm sure some people will be talking about this today, is that not only are social economy organizations important to communities from the point of view of participation and empowerment, but we found that they are often some of the most innovative forms of development for communities. So that's another issue. And then looking at some of the things that we're finding so far in our research is that indeed, as we had assumed, and as many of you know already, social economy organizations and the activities that these organizations carry out are an important part of northern communities, and that given the right conditions, we believe that social economy organizations can be an important tool in helping communities ensure greater well-being of themselves. Okay, so talking a bit about the social economy in Nunavut, Nunavut is probably, if you look at all of the northern regions, Nunavut has probably been at the forefront of recognizing the importance of what we now call the social economy. And I'm sure Glenn will be talking a bit about that. So we recognize that, and we hope to build on what the Nunavut has been doing already. And that if you just look at the history of Nunavut, you see that social economy organizations have been visible in dealing with many of the enormous social and economic changes that have occurred in the region. The social economy organizations have been crucial for allowing communities to deal with many of these issues. And just to a few examples that show this is the cooperatives, the importance of the cooperatives, the Inuit-based cooperatives that have been important at for ensuring that communities have certain basic economic supplies and that have some sort of basic control over what comes into their community and ensuring that they have certain supplies when necessary. And that was the original idea. It was done in a way that that was it felt what that worked best with the traditional values of those particular communities, and so cooperatives are an excellent example of how social economy organizations have allowed communities in Nunavut to deal with some of the social and economic change issues. Hunter and trapper organizations are another example that were established to ensure that traditional activities are continued and that they're valued and that they're adapted to the needs of the community. And I could go on and on. There's a lot of examples, but I'll just raise those two. And as I said before, and this is not news to most of you. This is in Nunavut. It's well known, these types of activities. And if you just look at any of the key documents, the Nunavut Economic Development Strategy, for example, this is all pointed out. So is there another one? I just wanted to start out. I'll be dealing in more detail when I do my presentation on some of the research that we're doing, the mapping research that we're doing in Nunavut. But if you just look at, to leave you some of the things we've been finding in our own research on Nunavut, what's important about the social economy and what's some of the characteristics of the social economy in Nunavut. First of all, the one thing that I want to point out is that in our research, we differentiate between basically two types. We differentiate so as not to exclude another important type of social economic activity that's often ignored in social economy research, I think, and that's the informal social economy. And each of us look at formal and informal social economy activities in a different way, but basically you can look at studying the social economy by just looking at formal social economy organizations. Now, those are organizations that have a constitution that exist with employees or would exist with some sort of board of directors, etc. Those are formal organizations that exist. But in reality, in communities, there's a whole range of activities that are, you have to call social economy activities, that are carried out in informal ways. And our research is looking at both ways. And when we talk a little bit after the break, we'll hear from Francis and we'll hear some of the research that David and Brent's doing. They deal with both the informal as well as the formal aspects of social economy. I deal primarily, in my activities, as I'll explain, primarily with formal activities, studying the social economy organizations, their needs. But Cernica, as a group, have been trying to look at both aspects of it. So looking just at the formal social economy organizations, the first thing that we had to do was try and map out what these organizations are, where they are, and what they do. We did a census of social economy organizations, and we, after this initial census, we identified 295 formal and active social organizations in Nunavut. Now, this list changes day to day. This list is a list that's very difficult to finalize because there are a whole range of there's a whole range of organizations that either we miss or that are not really formal organizations and therefore we don't include them, yet they're important for the communities. So this list is changing from day to day, but right now we've identified 295 formal and active social organizations that in Nunavut. And then we have a whole list of other organizations that we're looking at that are potentially social economy organizations. And we did an initial analysis of these organizations just to try and some of the basic characteristics of them. And we find that what differentiates Nunavut, the social economy in Nunavut, from other social economy organizations in other regions is that Nunavut has an extremely large number of social economy organizations involved in what I call the marketplace, meaning that they provide activities that are normally covered by profit-oriented. Now, the major reason for that is the cooperatives. The cooperatives both in the retail sector and the cooperatives in the arts and crafts sector. It's one of the main reasons why you see such a large number of social economy organizations involved in the marketplace. Nunavut has fewer social economy organizations involved in advocacy, meaning that a lot of, in different regions of Canada, when you look at the data, there's a lot of social organizations that are involved in trying to promote a particular cause. That's not one of the characteristics of, there are those social organizations, social economy organizations in Nunavut, but there's less of them in Nunavut than other in other regions. the thing that's fascinating, another thing that's fascinating about Nunavut is that Nunavut has a lot of social economy organizations have become linked in one manner or another with either the Nunavut government or have become institutionalized through the land claims process. So that makes them almost quasi-governmental organizations. They are not part of the government, but you can't exclude them from being part of the government. And it's a problem that we're dealing with in how do you categorize these things. But these are important organizations, and they're key organizations that we will continue to look at, but which we have to understand its specific characteristics of those. Under the land claims process, they're called the institutions of public government. I think that's the term. This is another unique aspect about social economy organizations in Nunavut that we're looking at. The final thing that I'll say before I end is that the voluntary sector in Nunavut is smaller than in other regions. That when you look at the data, and I'll talk once more after the break when I present some more of our research findings, you'll see that we found that there are fewer organizations that depend upon volunteers for their work than in other regions. So I'll talk a bit more about some of these differences later, but I just wanted to introduce in discussions of the social economy in Nunavut some of the things that we found so far in our research. Is there any questions? Yes. Sometimes just the two other territories. Most of these are two other territories. When we have data for all of Canada, then we compare it to those. But the best data we have, because we're collecting data from the other territories, the best we have is to compare. And when you see that later on when I elaborate on some of the research we're doing, mostly it's just in comparison to the other territories. But these things also include, we know we can compare these issues to Canada as a whole because there was a study done in about 5 or 6 years ago that allows us to give an idea of what exists in the rest of Canada. But other ones we can only compare to the other territories because that's all we have data for at this point. We're part of this national hub where we do have portraiture work that's going on that we hope to compare our data from Nunavut with the rest of the regions of Canada. But they're not as ahead as we are. So we're waiting on that. Yes, Marielle.
When you say the voluntary sector is smaller, are you really saying that the organizations have more paid employees than volunteers? Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about general participation of volunteers?
When you ask organizations if they depend upon volunteers for their activities, fewer organizations in Nunavut say yes. The research then has to sort of find out why this is. The research we're at right now is just to find out this basic data. Yeah.
Just a question about Inuit organizations and where they fit in here. I know you touched on that, but you've also, I think, written that, and you just described it generally as land claim organizations, that to categorize them within the social economy might in some way compromise their effort for self-government. Not, you know, here in Nunavut, we don't have that issue, and I just wonder why you're not including Inuit organizations in that, because that's obviously a very large sector.
Yeah. We do include in Nunavut, we do. It's not an issue in Nunavut, it's an issue in certain other areas where in Northwest Territories in the Yukon, we sent out an initial questionnaire survey asking groups, we had a big list of all the groups that could possibly be social economy organizations. We sent them out. We got some questionnaires back from some First Nations groups saying, why are you including us as a social economy? We are a sovereign government. We're the state. So we're not a social economy organization. And by including us as a social economy organization, you're sort of denying our sovereignty as state. So that's the issue we have to face, is that we have to ensure, when we're doing our categorization, that those organizations that see themselves and that as sovereign and as state organizations aren't included in the social economy. It hasn't been an issue in Nunavut, but in other areas, and especially those areas where you don't have solved or resolved land claims issues, that's where you have the biggest problem. Of us defining it's a problem for, it's only a problem for us, just defining where, how we categorize it. Yeah.
I was just going to say, not to contradict what you were saying earlier at all, just in terms of the number of social economy organizations or the extent to which there is a volunteer sector in Nunavut or in the North in general, I mean, the challenge, as you mentioned earlier, is that the social economy in the North looks very different than it does in the South, and how we categorize things and what we're looking for is, it's difficult to take the template from the South and apply it to the North because what the social economy is here is so very different. So I think in some of our work, David, and my work with, and Francis and Chris, that you know a lot of what goes on informally, we're not able to capture that in a survey like this. It's, there's so much that goes on in my experience living in the North that would be considered a social economy that is social capital. Mm-hmm. It's just that it doesn't have a name and a not-for-profit status and a building. It's a different kind of social capital that we're not used to looking at in the South. And so there's certainly lots of literature that suggested that that kind of social capital is very widespread and socially and culturally embedded in the North. So it's not to say that, I was just wanting to add that it's not to say that the Sanders were less of a volunteer sector here or less of a less social capital here. In fact, it might in fact be the contrary, that there's more social capital here than there is in the South.
Yeah. Well, in fact, you know, once again, we're still at an initial stage of our research, or not an initial stage, we're sort of at a mid-stage. One of the questions that we asked ourselves when we look at this data is, first of all, you say that there are fewer social economy organizations that rely on volunteers, but in the North, there's a higher percentage of social economy organizations as a whole. So, in fact, when you look at, you know, you try to measure volunteerism, you can still say that there's more volunteerism in the North. It's just there's so many more social organizations that appears using this analysis that there's less. You can't say if it's true that social economy organizations in the North rely less on volunteers, that means that there's less volunteerism in the North. You can't say that because there's more groups. You can't sort of make a quantitative judgment. It's just there's more groups.
Yeah, just wondering, I guess there's so much that you can include in this study, and one of the two things that I'm thinking about is, one is that the size of the marketplace and the geographic spread of the marketplace, and in one way it's a very small population with a very large landmass, so you have these issues of freight and of movement of people that is probably going to factor in, like for example, volunteerism, where really, you know, need to get paid to go to meetings and things like that. So that kind of issue, that's, you know, in the Northwest Territories, it's always key. You have to pay honorariums, regardless. So, you know, that kind of, you know, as opposed to, let's say, a big city where you have other economic activities taking place and volunteerism is a bit, you know, less of an issue. So I think that's probably the main factor in the final analysis.
Yeah.
The fact that you say Nunavut has fewer social economy organizations involved in advocacy, I would agree with that. Most people don't want to take it to the wall when they should be. I'm amazed at how bureaucratic people become as soon as they get on the board and how they don't want to stir the pot. And there has been for 8 straight years a culture of fear here about speaking up, whether it was the civil servants, whether it was the organizations that lived on the government largesse, whether it was because towns were too small, whether it was the leadership didn't want to hear it. But I do agree with that, that it's shocking the lack of advocacy that goes on in the organizations who have it as their mandate or who were struck in the first place to take that issue to the wall and don't.
Yeah. You know, one of the good things for us about this meeting is that we as Cernica, you know, one of the things that we decided earlier on was that we couldn't do this research without getting feedback from you. We, you know, I collect these numbers, we collect these numbers, we don't know what these numbers mean until we talk to you. And it's important for us to listen to your explanations, because that's the only way we can understand this data, is to talk to you about why you think the numbers that we got, the numbers that we got. And so that's great.